Hey, welcome to the podcast. It's Tony Robbins. Listen, today we're going to talk about that second element that's required for any business to grow geometrically. Do you recall what the two keys are? Number one, every business has to innovate. We've got to find a way to meet our clients' needs better than anyone else in the marketplace. But you can innovate and you can be in a position where you're ineffective in your marketing, because that's the second thing you got to do. You got to get people to want to do business with you. You got to get people to seek you out in a world where there is so much information coming at them. So how do you set yourself apart? And if you really think about it, every single business out there are many businesses I'm sure you've seen that have an inferior product or an inferior service to your own. But if they're doing more business, it's because they're better marketers. Now, the ideal is you're the best product because you're constantly innovating and you're the best marketer. That's something like an Apple, right? That's what they've done. They really deliver the best products, the best innovation, but they have phenomenal marketing. That's really our goal in this podcast, is to move you in that direction. And so to do that today, I've asked Anna York to interview Drew Neisser. Drew is brilliant. Many of you know him probably because he's the CEO of the renowned marketing firm Renegade. And he's going to talk to you about the skills, the mindset, and the tools that'll give you a winning marketing campaigns, and also what to avoid. Sometimes some of the mistakes can just take out your marketing so quickly. So his insights I think you're going to find invaluable. Let's get right to the podcast.
How do you capture the limited attention of your clients through marketing when they are constantly being bombarded with advertising? How do you compete with corporations that have seemingly unlimited resources? Through world-class marketing. World-class marketing comes from creating a unique selling proposition we call value-add marketing. You're literally adding value to your customers' lives. You do something. You teach them something. You give them something valuable that costs them nothing. Then they look to you as the expert and want you to supply them with more information, more experience, and more products. So to help us explore what it takes to deliver world-class marketing, we have Drew Neisser, author, speaker, blogger, and founder and CEO of Renegade, a New York City-based social media and marketing agency that helps B2B and B2C clients cut through the BS and improve their marketing ROI. Drew, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great. In your book, The CMO's Periodic Table, A Renegade's Guide to Marketing, you highlight 64 intimate conversations you've had with marketing leaders at prominent companies. Were there any characteristics that these senior marketers had in common?
It's really interesting when you talk to, first of all, the opportunity to talk to 64 really smart marketers, you can imagine, is a wonderful thing for me. And I'm so grateful to all of them. But you know you're going to learn a lot. And the first thing you realize is that there is no such thing as a one-size-fits-all solution. The second thing you realize is that these folks have a methodology that could work wherever they go. But their individual problems require very specific solutions. And so one of the things I wanted to do in the book was to lay out a lot of different elements. If you can master all of these, then it's just a question of putting the right ones together. So now to answer your question, I did see some common themes across these 64. And I'll use an acronym, CATS, because these are cool cats. And it stands for courageous, artistic, thoughtful, and scientific. And if you want, I can go through each of those just briefly and explain what those are.
That would be great.
So courage is something that you really find in the greatest marketers. They have the ability, I'm going to say sometimes, to even bet the ranch. Sir Terry Leahy, who became a sir after moving from the chief marketing officer to the CEO of Tesco, a huge food company, a retail chain in England, in the world. And at one point in his career as the CMO, he risked 20% of profits in order to set a loyalty program. That was a huge, huge risk, but he had the courage to do it. Similarly, Terry Funk Graham of Jack in the Box had the courage to do brilliant advertising, including a famous ad where she had a young man hallucinating at the drive-thru about 30 tacos. And of course, she ran into protesters, which she handled courageously by actually turning on the sprinklers at the headquarters, which dampened the protesters' enthusiasm. Literally, the protest never happened. So that's courage, is the ability to sort of understand what risks can be taken and the courage to take them. There's an artistic element to most of these successful folks, and the book is really about blending the art and the science. But the artistic ones have the ability to identify ideas and run with those ideas in a way that's pretty special. A quick example, Marty St. George of JetBlue had heard about Carmageddon, which was in your neck of the woods when they were shutting down the San Diego freeway. And they decided to offer, JetBlue offered free flights from LA to San Diego during what was supposed to be called Carmageddon. And it just got tremendous publicity for that. It was a wonderfully artistic one that was consistent with their brand.
Yeah, and also, you know, adding value to customers, like sort of foreseeing what their needs would be and then jumping to fill that need.
Exactly. And that's a really artistic, the ability to do real-time marketing, as that is described, is really an art form. And you're right. And I get to, I'm a big believer in what you're talking about. I call it marketing as service, and it's one of the elements I describe. And that is in the next area, this area of thoughtful. What does it mean to be thoughtful as a marketer? They're not just thoughtful in terms of how they approach their job, but they're also thoughtful on a bigger, where marketing fits in the broader social good. I mean, there's a number of people like Daniel Lebetsky, the founder of Kind, who's in the book and talks about the role that social purpose plays, not only inspiring him to do the Kind thing, but he loves to do this. He does this in New York. He'll get on the subway. He'll see someone who had just shared a subway seat with someone else, and I'll hand him a couple of Kind bars and say, here, one for you and one for you to give to somebody else. Just a sort of nice little kind gesture. But there's a lot of thinking that goes into that kind of thoughtfulness. And then the last area is this scientific. One of the challenges that a lot of marketers face, particularly small businesses, they don't know where to spend the money. And so they spend it everywhere. And then they say, well, I don't know what's working. More and more and more modern marketers are progressing and finding ways of measuring and creating measurable programs. And that's, again, that's an art form. But today, with so much digital opportunity, it's increasingly easy to measure.
So for those small business owners who have limited resources, who are really overwhelmed with all of the opportunities available, not just today, the proven methods, but things that are coming just around the corner that they might read about or hear from somebody that it's the new hotness. How would a small business owner approach the decision making on what to invest time and energy and money into?
It's a great question, and I think that the biggest mistake that I see, particularly with small businesses, is that they hear about a channel and they jump into the channel. Oh, there's social media. We better have a Facebook page. And what they don't have is a strategy, which is a problem because it's sort of that, every road looks good if you don't know where you're going situation. So that I always step back and typically when you find a small business that isn't having success with their marketing, it's not because that they don't have, they're not smart about where they're spending it. It's because they haven't spent time figuring out why their brand is unique. Notice I didn't say the word better, because this isn't about better. This is about being unique. And you use the words, unique selling proposition. But I think it's deeper than that in the sense of why. Why are you doing it? What makes you unique? And it's not necessarily a wholly rational uniqueness the way, say, better ingredients, better pizza is for Papa John's. It can be emotional. I mean, one of the folks that I interviewed and really enjoyed was from Mary Kay Cosmetics. And you talk about a well-branded company who, in fact, the brand is in the hands of independent ambassadors. But those ambassadors, Mary Kay's commitment is to empowering women, the women that sell for them and the women that buy from them. So you think about that why, and you say, okay, I'm about empowering women. Now, where do I spend my marketing dollars? Well, maybe I need to do forums on helping women get jobs in the workplace after having a first child, or how to re-enter the workforce, or I need to help empower women. So you make your media choices based on your uniqueness. And so they go together. And I think that's really so fundamental, but it's so often skipped. I will tell you flat out that 75% of small businesses do not have a strategy.
Interesting. We were also talking a little bit about company culture in another interview, and that came up at the core level, which is identifying the values of the business and the values of the customer. So it sounds like you're saying that it's very similar in that you really need to figure out what your values are as a company and who your customer is, and then every decision that you make, including marketing decisions, need to be in alignment with that.
Exactly. And I think if you, it's really important that the uniqueness not be a coat of paint. It really is important. You can't just say, we're the purple brand, right? And then paint everything purple and call it a day. And a good example of that, I don't know if you've ever been into or had experience with Kidzania, but their employees have names. It's all about empowering kids and teaching kids by making them in control of their own country. So there's a currency. The kids are on the advisory board. They only hire people who like kids. You know, they're committed. Their commitment to teaching kids in a very different way and in a fun environment goes from all the way to the CEO, who isn't called the CEO, he's a governor, to the CMO, who's called, you know, Minister of Communication. So that brand, if you are looking for how deep can culture and brand and marketing go together and be blended so you can't even distinguish them, that's when you know you're doing it right. It doesn't even seem like marketing anymore. It's just, this is how we behave.
So are there any tactics that you would recommend for a small business owner to discover what those things are? Because it sounds simple, right? You ask, okay, what are our values? What do we stand for? Who are we serving? But in a lot of cases, especially with larger brands, they bring in a facilitator, right? You'll have a consultant come in and work you through that whole process. Is there any kind of primer or recommendations that you would have for a DIY self-discovery of what business, not just what business you're in, because Tony speaks about this a lot, but what business you should be in?
Yeah,
so moving forward, right? Instead
sure.
of thinking about where you are.
You know, I think that small businesses have an opportunity every day to talk to their customers and so often miss that opportunity because they're so concerned about trying to serve the next one. And the information is right there in front of them. And I think it's really important to say, not every customer is a good customer. So I want to figure out, who are my best customers and why are they happy with me? What is it about them? And spend time with them and find out what their passions are, because they may not be passionate about whatever your dry cleaning service, but they may be passionate about looking good, right? They may not be passionate about, you know, the water service, but they may be passionate about living a healthy life. And those are things that you can find out and just by talking to people. And you don't have to talk to 1,000. You can talk to 50 of customers or the customers you think you want to do business with. And then I can extend this a little bit more. When, why am I talking about existing customers? And why am I talking about not all customers are equal? If you look at marketing, the problem with marketing small businesses have is they see it as cost, right? How much do I spend? So let's back this into, how much is a customer worth to you, right? Lifetime value. How much is that customer going to spend either with my brand or by encouraging other people to buy my services, right? And so you can put a dollar amount on that, whether it's $5, $10, $100, $5,000, whatever that number is. And then you know, well, I can spend that much money to acquire this type of customer. And in most cases, your next customer will look like your current customer. So therefore, talk to your current customers, get to know all aspects of their behavior, find out what sports their kids are doing. Is, you know, maybe that it's all soccer moms are your target. Fine. Then there's your answer for, you know, how do you serve a soccer mom better? And maybe you need to sponsor a soccer team, right? Because that's what they really care about. So it's primary research with your customers there. And I'll tell you, the name Renegade for us came from one of our customers before we existed. We were a division of a large agency, and somebody said, "Hey, oh, you're those Renegades over at Dentsu," and I said, "Damn right we are."
We're going rogue.
Right. That's who we are. That's what we do. And so anyway, I think that you don't need to talk to 1,000, you just need to talk to the right ones, and you just have to really get the earwax out and figure out, all right, how can I uniquely meet their needs and do it on a consistent basis, and how can I structure the organization in order to do that? If, for example, you're all about customer service, then you better hire people who like people, right?
Yeah, that definitely makes sense.
And, go ahead.
That actually brings me to a question I was going to ask about. How do you equip yourself with the right tools to be able to serve the needs of those customers? In other words, what behind-the-scenes competencies are key to a successful marketing team or campaign? Because a lot of these small business owners are doing it themselves, and they feel possibly intimidated by not having a skill set that they think, you know, maybe I'm not creative enough, or we don't have the resources, or I can't, you know, write copy, or, you know, there are a lot of things that I think they might be struggling with. So what are some of the basic ways that they can prepare themselves to be able to DIY it?
You know, I think one of the things that they can really think about, and this is a couple of chapters in the book, is networking with other small businesses. There isn't a challenge that they're facing that somebody just down the road hasn't probably addressed. And so making the time to get out of the office, or doing it at night, or doing it on the weekends, and talk to the people and ask them, okay, how are you doing? What tools are you using? A lot of small businesses have gravitated to HubSpot, for example, which is a small business CRM, customer relationship management tool. It allows you to track leads and develop lead generation programs. So before you jump to HubSpot, though, you can talk to, you know, 10 businesses in your neighborhood and say, what were the issues? How'd you do it? What resources did it require? And then how did you fulfill those? So I think the answers, for the most part, again, are right in their neighborhood. They just have to get out and make sure that they are talking to the people. In terms of very specific things, again, I think it depends on, first, we have our unique position. Then we start to say, all right, how do we execute that, make sure that the product or service aligns with that 100%? Then how do we make the marketing align with that? And let's say that it ends up being a content marketing play, because you want to provide all the reasons that your pool service, why the reasons you need a specific, why your pool needs to be cleaned a certain way, right? And so you create all this content. Well, chances are you personally, because you're in this business, you know this stuff. You could probably, even if you're not a writer, you could write down a bunch of thoughts. And once you get your thoughts down, then you can find somebody. There are lots and lots of writers out there, services out there that can help you get this done pretty cheaply. So I think this is where you, in one of the chapters in my book, Tiny Budget, Julie Garlicott talks about how she sometimes outsources and insources, and she very strategically uses it. There are some things where it's just cheaper to go outside, and you kind of know what your strengths and weaknesses are. And if you don't know how to write, then you better get outside help for the writer. If you don't know how to use a CRM system, make sure you get one. That's one really easy. And then someone in the organization is assigned to go through the tutorials.
Sure, that makes sense. Creating a custom solution based on your needs. Mm-hmm. So on the topic of content marketing and social media, what are some common mistakes that you've seen small business owners make, and how can they avoid making these mistakes?
So, you know, the first most common mistake is not having a social strategy. Literally just saying, okay, we're going to be on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram without necessarily a plan or reason why they're going to be there. And so that's number one. Number two is they spend all their time talking about themselves and think of it as an advertising channel, and they're not social. And think of it as going to a party, and you're going to a party and all you do is talk about yourself. Well, you're the bore that everybody sort of avoids, right? Even Shaquille O'Neal, with his what's called the Shaq rule, it's sort of 60% fun and interesting, and 30% sort of a little bit closer to brand, and then 10% of it is actually, hey, buy my stuff. And so those are two. And number Three is, again, if you have this unique position, then bringing that position to life in a passionate way, in theory, your position should be extremely attractive to certain types of people, right? So then you can be deliver that, you can find those people in on social that are interested and excited around a particular communal idea, and you embrace them and celebrate them, and then gradually, you know, it's sort of give, get. And so that's really, I think that, so biggest mistake, not having a strategy. Second is spending too much time talking about yourself. Probably the third biggest mistake is that they assign it to the intern or the person with the most friends on Facebook and not necessarily somebody who actually knows anything about it. And a lot of big mistakes have happened in social media because they turned over their brand. But I will say that the upside here with social and content is very high. And those that get it right are finding tremendous success with it. I guess the last thing on social now in particular, Facebook has become a paid channel, and it is important to acknowledge that if you want to make hay on Facebook, then you need to budget some advertising dollars for it. Which in my mind is actually a good thing because Facebook is an extremely powerful and effective advertising channel. It's just not as social as it used to be.
Yeah, and Facebook too continues to evolve. I mean, they just came out with what people are calling the Yelp killer, right? I guess I'm wondering, making decisions about which platforms to be on. I mean, Facebook was originally an owned media channel, what people thought it was. And like you said, it's transitioning into becoming a paid media channel. Do you think that there are any new channels or new opportunities that are going to emerge in 2016 or even beyond that marketers and small business owners should keep an eye on and be aware of and deeply consider starting to leverage?
Well, I think, you know, first, the most obvious answer to that is mobile and mobile everything, in the sense that if your website isn't mobile optimized, then you're making a big mistake, because chances are over 50% of the views will be on a mobile device. Also, understanding how mobile plays into your category. Are they searching on mobile for your location? Are they doing research? You need to understand that so that you can design your mobile experience accordingly. You need to understand how mobile might be a transactional opportunity for you. Are people going to be using Apple Pay, and are you ready for that? So that's a massive thing, mobile. The next big area, and this has been big for a while, but video, and especially streaming video. I'm a big fan of this platform, Blab, which is it's a streaming video platform where, like Google Hangouts, but it's only four people at the most. And it's actually just quite a cool little streaming platform and great for archiving video content. I have friends who swear by Periscope as the coolest, hippest thing out there in terms of streaming video. So I think that's an area that could be an opportunity for some small businesses. And then there's this whole world of the Internet of Things, IoT, and as devices start to connect, more and more businesses will need to make their experiences smarter. And I think it's going to be hard for small businesses in some ways and maybe easier in others. And by this, I mean there's going to be an expectation. For example, if I go to Amazon right now and I go shopping, they'll always say, people who like this book like that book, right? And so I know that. I've expected that. I've gotten used to it. It gets smarter as I buy. There's beginning to be an expectation that wherever I go on the web, that someone's going to know nothing about me to deliver something intelligent. Well, this is happening now on an offline basis as well. So it's quite possible through beacon technology or Wi-Fi technology that you as a small business would know who this person is. There's facial recognition software that would know whether it's a male or a female, so you can change your video display accordingly. There's lots of things like that that small businesses might say, oh, we can't do that, but this technology is going to become very accessible. So starting to think about how you fit into this Internet of Things is going to be important, and also really important that you're not a commodity that can be just ordered on Amazon.
Renegade's philosophy is marketing as service. Can you explain a little bit more about what that means and what that means for the company, the brand, and what that means for the customer?
Absolutely. I love this. So I coined this expression, marketing as service, to be the opposite of marketing as message. And marketing as message is the dominant part of communication strategy. Most companies try to spend all their time thinking about what can they say? What's my message? And I wanted to turn that on its head by saying, what can we do, not what can we say? So we think in terms of do's, not saying. And those do's can be entertaining, they can be enlightening, they can be an experience, they can be content. There's a lot of wonderful ways of doing things, of turning marketing into a service. And I can give you a quintessential example of one that I'm really proud of that Renegade did several years ago for HSBC, the large global bank. And HSBC came to us and said, hey, we're this large global bank, but we have this world's local bank position. We want to put the New York and the local into our message. And also, we want people to understand that we have local knowledge. So we actually came up with a program called the HSBC Bank Cab. And the bank cab is a checker cab that's red and white and that drove around New York City and was free to HSBC customers. So it was a marketing that was a service. Now, the twist that we did here was we did a search for the most knowledgeable cab driver in New York, which got literally 100 million PR impressions on a global basis as we, because most people think of New York cabbies as not being knowledgeable these days. So we hired this guy, Johnny Morello. He drove this cab around New York City for 12 years, and people loved it. I mean, people who rode in the cab were twice as likely to recommend, 80% more likely to stay loyal to the bank. So it was a wonderful, long-lasting experience. It generated PR. It generated goodwill. It was a service that was marketing. Another example of marketing and service, and I cover this in the book in great detail, is American Express's approach to marketing. I know you've heard of Small Business Saturday and the Open Forum. They have many other examples of marketing as service. And their philosophy is that if they help small businesses grow, their business will grow right along with them. So you ask John Hayes, the CMO of American Express, can I point to revenue increases as a result directly of this program? No. But he can say we see it in a brand lift. We know that small business customers like Small Business Saturday. In fact, they've started a movement, in a way. And so this has informed everything that at Renegade has been doing. That's why we got into social media so early and content marketing so early, because those are two great ways of being of service. And I think that if you think about social media as a service channel first, it will change your perspective on the posts that you do. As you start saying, oh, I could be in service here. How could I be helpful today? Well, that's marketing a service. Thanks for asking.
Great. So were there any key takeaways from the book or from, you know, some of your future thoughts on marketing that go beyond marketing, that sort of reach deeper into business philosophy?
Yes. I mean, there are a number of things. I mean, one of the things that I think distinguishes successful businesses from the unsuccessful ones is that these folks are truly passionate about what they believe. I mean, they really are evangelists for for their business and the service or product that they provide. And I had an opportunity to talk to John Yembrick of NASA, and that's, you know, National Aeronautics Space Administration. And they have built a phenomenal social media presence based on the passion that John Yembrick and his partner have for science and astronomy. And they've done amazingly clever things. During Super Bowl Sunday, they did Supernova Sunday. And they've done a number of other things like that. But here's the ultimate measure that you can figure out. I've succeeded on social win, and is Yembrick and the company were not allowed to post during the government shutdown. So we couldn't post, right? And he has millions of followers across all these channels. Well, the fans, once they heard that they couldn't post, took over the feeds. They were so dedicated to the feed that they did it. So you have to ask yourself, have we done such a good job with our content and with our social that our fans would actually miss it if we didn't provide it? And that, to me, that stems from a passion. And you can see that same passion, by the way, in GE. Go to their Pinterest boards and look at how excited they get about science. It's an amazing the power of passion and optimism. And I saw this in the from all of the successful senior marketers that I talked to.
Great. Well, thanks, Drew. Is there anything else you'd like to share with Tony's audience before we sign off?
Well, I would like to leave you with two thoughts as you go forth into your marketing, that there's this artistic part and the science part. And your challenge is identify the artistic part, and by that I think the unique positioning. And the science part is your ability to manage, make your decisions on a test and learn basis. So you do something, you see what kind of results, as long as you're measuring the right things, you add another component, you measure that, and you keep going. Is what you don't want to do at the end of a year of your marketing and say, I have no clue what worked and what didn't. So blend the art and the science, and then if you need a refresher, go ahead and get CMO's Periodic Table, A Renegade's Guide to Marketing. My new book just came out, and I think you will find it extremely useful.
Great. Well, thanks, Drew, so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Do you have the right mindset and skills to take your business to the next level? Business Mastery is the only event in the world created by Tony Robbins to prepare you to master the mindset and skills you need in business to elevate your game. A one-of-a-kind, immersive program, Business Mastery will allow you to understand the critical factors impacting your business, then refocus and realign with the strategy and psychology you need to compete and innovate in any economy. Remember, business success is 80% psychology and 20% mechanics. If you're ready to learn and master the strategies to help you grow your business and stay competitive, then don't hesitate. Apply for the next Business Mastery program now. Learn more about the Business Mastery event at www.tonyrobbins.com. The Tony Robbins Podcast is directed by Tony Robbins, hosted by Anna York, and produced by Carrie Song. Brooks Loro is our digital editor. Tyler Culbertson is our media coordinator. Special thanks to Diane Adcock for her creative review. Our website is tonyrobbins.com/podcast, where you can listen to all of our episodes, read articles, and learn more about upcoming events. Copyright Robbins Research International.